Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you for spending part of your day with me. So what happens when you do such a good job at creating a character on TV that, one, you become a meme, and two, people seem to confuse you with that fake human? I'm going to ask my next guest this because sometimes it happens to him. You see, if you scour pop culture depictions on the internet for, quote, traditional masculinity, his character on the TV show Parks and Rec, the meat-loving, woodworking Ron Swanson, will pop up. For those of you who don't know, Ron would say things like, "Fishing relaxes me. It's like yoga, except I get to kill something." Or to a waitress, "Just give me all the bacon and eggs you have. Wait, I worried what you heard was give me a lot of bacon and eggs. What I said was give me all the bacon and eggs you have. Do you understand?" Now, Nick Offerman does have something in common with Ron. They both like woodworking, but Offerman has more to well offer. He is on tour with a new live act called All Rise, which has music, storytelling, some jokes, some dancing. He is also working on the second season of his do-it-yourself reality competition, Making It. It's currently in production for a December season premiere. And Nick Offerman joins us now from Los Angeles. Hi, Nick.
Good afternoon. Your afternoon there.
Yeah, we are. Good morning to you there.
Thank you.
So I want to know, you know, obviously people who come to your show are fans of Park and Rec. And this idea that Ron Swanson is this hyper-masculine, libertarian-type guy, I understand you play around with that expectation in this show. How so?
Well, I sort of do it in my life as well. Ron Swanson is a brilliantly written comedy character by a team of geniuses, and I just happen to be the donkey who's lucky enough to receive that dialogue and translate it to an audience. And in my real life, I'm a real human being, which means I'm much more complicated and sloppy and silly. I mean, you know, Ron lives his life by a few simple rules, but I have to exist in the real modern world, and I can't really behave like the throwback that he is. So, while I was born into this body that happens to be good at splitting firewood, I also have to, you know, use modern technology and drive politely in Los Angeles, which is a huge challenge. And so all of these things have a softening effect. And so, you know, I try to say to the audience, look, I do enjoy bacon, but my cardiovascular system exists in the real world. So I can't quite eat all the bacon and eggs, perhaps, that Ron is able to.
Now, do you do this in a very matter-of-fact way, or you do it through song, through comedy, through how do you express this to the audience?
Well, the show is much less Ron Swanson-centric than one might think. I feel like it's sort of understood. You know, if you enjoy the philosophy and the spirit of Parks and Recreation, here's one of the guys that brought it to you, and here are some new thoughts about how my particular heart and soul and toolbox can address the society we're living in today. So, you know, at the end of the show, if people are able to sit through the whole 80 minutes, then I do offer a little bit of Parks and Recreation dessert. But until the encore, there's no mention.
Well, you know, we scoured looking for any sort of audio or tape about the show, but there's not a lot. But there is a trailer, so I want to play a little bit of it for our audience. This is the trailer for the All Rise tour.
It's an evening of deliberative talking and light dance that will compel you to chuckle while enjoining you to brandish a better side of humanity than the one to which we have grown accustomed.
So that's what I have. So I'm going to try to deconstruct that with you. What side of humanity are you talking about there, Nick?
What could be more compelling than that lugubrious sentence? It has to do with, in my humble Midwestern opinion, I feel like the reason a lot of people are upset these days is because we've allowed ourselves to give in to consumerism and blindly handing over our agency in general to corporate mindsets, and I include our White House in that. Like, our government and our corporations have become hopelessly intermingled. And so It's examining the tribal behavior that human beings are capable of. It's very easy to let ourselves fall into the luxury of having our cars drive us to work, having all of our food delivered by robots. And so it's understandable. I'm complicit with everybody else who flips a light switch. You know, as soon as you screw in one light bulb, you're part of the system that says, here's my money, please send me electricity, and I presume you're going to be good to the planet while you do it. But either way, I just hope my air conditioner stays on. And so it's making fun of that side of humanity, saying, look, we're all in a big mess, and here's how we've got here. And maybe let's try and turn this boat around a little bit.
I often have that thought when I'm in an airport and I see the people mover, the walking sidewalk, and I think, I'm able-bodied. I can walk. As long as I can, I'm going to actually put one foot in front of the other and walk to my gates.
That's it, exactly. It's where do we each personally draw that line? Like, you know what? I can spread peanut butter and jelly on bread. I don't need someone to combine that in a jar for me.
My guest is Nick Offerman. The name of his new show is All Rise. It's going to be at the Beacon, actually, on November 3rd. So the Chicago Trib did a write-up of your show, and you can agree or disagree with this statement. I'd love to know what you think. They noted that one of the themes was, quote, acceptance both of others and of ourselves. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, I heartily agree with that. I mean, again, part of the part of my focus is our tribal behavior, our tendency to, you know, say, well, I'm happy to. I think everybody should have a good life, but my people set up this government, or my people set up this town, so you other people that are different than what I perceive my people to be, maybe I would like you to have all of your rights, but maybe somewhere else. And so it's making fun of the idea that we are slow to accept all people. You know, I sort of wrap up the show by saying, look, I think the original intention of America can be boiled down to, let's eventually be cool to everybody. And we obviously still have a long way to go in terms of that goal. And I think that's worthy of laughter, but also scrutiny.
You know, it's interesting because acceptance is, you know, it was actually a really hotly debated issue last week, given the dust up around Ellen DeGeneres and President Bush's friendship. People really were having some serious conversations about what's acceptable, what should you be tolerant about. Do you have any thoughts about that? Like, are there limits to acceptance for you?
Well, sure. I mean, I once attended an event where that particular former president was there, and I assiduously avoided any situation where I might be asked to shake hands with him because I really didn't want to, for the same reason that a lot of people were up in arms. And, I mean, it just comes down to what we're willing to accept in our yards, what kind of behavior is okay in our locality, in our town, versus once it gets farther and farther away, like what's going on with Turkey and Syria right now. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the country is like, well, you know, ultimately I got to go to work, so I can't really worry too much about that. I'm sure it's all going to work out fine. Meanwhile, you know, people are terrified and being killed. And so when it comes to human sort of tribal behavior, it's funny, if somebody comes up on your porch and says, hey, we're going to remove all the security so that the bad guys can come in and wipe you out, you say, wait a second, that's not that's not what I voted for. But the farther away it gets, the more we seem to be able to accept it. And again, that's human nature. I mean, it's amazing the atrocities that we'll commit to one another as long as we aren't made to look directly at it. And in terms of the whole Ellen and W thing, you know, there are points to be made on both sides. Yes, we should be accepting to people across the aisle, but when people are responsible for things like the war crimes that George W. Bush is responsible for, maybe you should get up and leave the room, or bring it up and say, hey, you know, I wanted to enjoy this football game, but it's not really cool, all those dead people, so I'm actually going to go watch it on my phone in the parking lot.
Is there anybody who during the course of your show you've seen get uncomfortable, or have you had any people respond to it in a way that you didn't anticipate?
There is a small percentage of Parks and Recreation fans who don't seem to understand, sadly, that it's a comedy program and not a documentary. I have seen people complain. Like sometimes I'll get four people will get up and leave when they realize that somehow their idea of Ron Swanson as a gun-wielding libertarian, like these people, you know, I'm of the opinion that if, in order to still be a supporter of Trump and the Republican Party these days requires a mightily impressive amount of denial and solipsism. And so these people seem to suffer from that, where they say, oh, this guy isn't a Trump guy? Like Ron Swanson isn't a Trump guy? The world isn't a Trump world? I don't like this comedy at all. And they get up and leave. And I say, well, that's sad. It means you're not very good at watching television. But, you know, in terms of the Ellen conversation, I would always say to them, well, look, I'd be totally happy to talk to you because I care about you as my fellow human. And I think, you know, you've gotten some bad information. Perhaps you're a Fox News viewer and you're receiving a lot of misinformation and a lot of falsehood. I would love to gently bring you back around to crisp reality. And there's no reason to get into fisticuffs.
My guest is Nick Offerman. The name of his show is All Rise. It'll be at the Beacon on November 3rd. So apparently there's a dance portion. And I've seen you dance before. Because when Nancy and Beth played at the Carlisle, and they've been a guest on the show, it's Stephanie Hunt and your wife Megan Mullally, their group. You're kind of their roadie slash hype man. And then at one point you get to shine. And you came out and you busted a move on the little Carlisle stage. So
thank you for your choice of the word shine. That's very generous.
So what will the dance portion of All Rise look like?
Well, you know, I just generally, you can't suppress the dance in me. I mean, when people see me for the first time, I think that's their first inkling.
Sure.
Here we have a dancer. And it's one of the tools in my toolbox. You know, I write these sort of humorous think pieces. This show has seven chapters. And I talk about white supremacy or homophobia or consumerism. And then at the end of each of the seven chapters, I sing a song that I've written on the guitar, and those go over very well. And then sprinkled throughout are little moves. There's a little bit of sashay. There's a touch of waltz, depending on the atmosphere. But, I mean, just generally, I think when people look at me on the stage, it is their visions that dance with delight between their eyeballs and my mortal coil.
They just know there's a jeté in the future somewhere during the night.
It is, yeah. A changement is en route.
So, and when you're assembling your show, when do you know it's time to incorporate the music, or that the music might be the best element for a comedic idea, or that it's a conduit? How do you decide when to weave the music in and out and when to use it?
Well, it's funny. I'm a theater actor. I started in Chicago theater and have had a very happy time working in theater, TV, and film. And it wasn't until, I don't know, 7 years ago or so that colleges mistakenly began to invite me to perform as a stand-up. And at first I said, oh, no, I don't do that. I perform works of literature on the boards. And eventually I said, well, wait a second. I would love to actually try and make 2,000 college students laugh. And so the thing I had going in was that I had already written a couple of funny songs for Megan just to make her laugh and play the guitar. And so that was kind of my jumping off point. And even to this day, now this is my third tour, I start with the songs. I come up with the ideas of what I want to put across, and then I cover all the best jokes in the songs to make sure that I'm not redundant. Then once I have taken, say, those 12 jokes about people who don't believe in science, when I've taken those off the table, then I go back and write the piece, knowing that I can't use those 12 jokes in the song. So I kind of work in reverse that way.
How long did it take you to put together All Rise?
Well, let's see. I was writing the songs starting in the spring. I'm a bit of a polymath, so like while I'm touring as the roadie for Nancy and Beth, I'm writing song lyrics, and I have a great collaborator named Mark Rivers who writes my melodies. And I wrote one song with Jeff Tweedy from Wilco. There's a song about a worker bee in the show that Jeff and I wrote. Hmm. So I put those together while I'm doing another job, and then while I was shooting season two of my crafting show, Making It, that I do with Amy Poehler for NBC. I'd go in, when I had breaks, I would go into my dressing room and work on the essay portions. So, in my spare time, I did it sort of across 2 or 3 months.
Also in your spare time, you helped develop an Offerman Scotch, a limited edition Scotch whiskey. Scotch down in my belly. I love Scotch. I am a Scotch girl.
I don't mind it myself.
What's your favorite cocktail? I like a Rusty Nail. That's kind of...
When somebody hands me a Rusty Nail or an Old Fashioned or a Manhattan, it doesn't hurt my feelings. I'm not terribly persnickety when it comes to my beverages. Even if we have any sort of whiskey, whether it's bourbon or rye or single malt, or Irish, but I'm a very simple man. This is one place where I think I line up with Ron Swanson. I like my Lagavulin Scotch in a glass, and that's it. It's just like bacon. I see no reason to try and improve it. There's no need to dress it up in any other way than in my mouth.
How did Offerman Scotch come about?
Well, in a nutshell, it serendipitously was my favorite scotch. It was the first good scotch I ever had. It was also the favorite scotch of Mike Schur, the main co-creator of Parks and Recreation. So then it became Ron Swanson's scotch on the show, and we went to it frequently enough that eventually we took Ron Swanson to the Lagavulin Distillery on the little island of Islay in Scotland, where I struck up a relationship with Lagavulin. We get along famously, so they had me do funny sort of comedy commercials for their scotch for the last 5 years or so. Those are all on YouTube under the title My Tales of Whiskey. And so... after 5 years of has apparently been successful for them, they said, do you want to do an Offerman edition? And I started bawling my eyes out and said, I can't believe my every dream is coming true. And it was really fascinating. I got together with their cask master and actually
And you said cask, C-A-S-K, right?
Yeah, that's right, okay. Cask master. The main whiskey scientist who makes these incredible elixirs, and with a couple producers from Parks and Rec who do the commercials with me, we sat in a room and mixed and blended and sampled all these different profiles and expressions to come up with this Offerman edition, and so it was really exciting to actually get to pick what it tastes like. And I'm very proud of it.
I do want to ask you a question about Making It before I let you go. So I'm curious, all the different skill sets. We've talked about how you were a theater guy and then sort of roped into stand-up a little bit. And then you write music. Of all your training. Of all your training, sir. What do you use being the host of a do-it-yourself reality competition? What did all that training... Because you know what? Those jobs are harder than they look, hosting those shows.
They are. They are harder than they look, but it's... I love a challenge. I love to show up to the wood shop and know that I have a very meticulous set of dovetail joints to cut. Or I love to show up on the set of a TV show or film knowing that I have a challenging monologue to achieve that day or some sort of stunt. And at Making It, it's a different skill set because you don't have to learn, you know, any dialogue. You're sort of required to be an enthusiastic cheerleader, and then hit a spike mark, and recite, you know, lines, host lines that are like, coming up next, here's a terrible pun about scissors and another one about paste. We'll be right back, you know. And so it's I come from a line of farmer politicians. My grandfather was the mayor of my small town, Minooka, Illinois, and my dad now sits on the village board. And we've always had the ability to stand in front of people and I guess try and lay some common sense on the matters at hand, often with a little bit of a sense of humor. And so that's kind of that's the dial that I turn up when I'm working on making it. I mean, it's such a dream job because I want to encourage people to make things of all stripes. I think that makes a good citizen, and I think it's very good for our health in every way to use your hands to exploit the coordination we've been gifted with as human beings. And so to get to do that on this show with Amy Poehler, an incredible comedy machine and wonderful leader, is just dreamy. You know, all I have to do is watch some genius people put ingredients together to make these craft projects and say, holy cow, you're amazing. Is that edible? No? Okay, I'll check again in 15 minutes because I'm hungry. But by and large, all that's required of me is enthusiasm and not falling flat on my face, or at times falling flat on my face for a laugh.
Enthusiastically. How about that?
Exactly.
Okay, Making It's coming back in December. On November 3rd, Nick Offerman will be at the Beacon with All Rise. Nick Offerman, thanks for being with us. Have a great rest of your October.
Thank you very kindly. Have a great one yourself.
Coming up, WNYC's chief archivist Andy Lancet takes us back to this day in 1968. We'll hear from sci-fi writer Arthur C. Clarke, who spoke about his collaboration with Stanley Kubrick on the screenplay for 2001: A Space Odyssey. More all of it after the